Hi, welcome to the CX Tipping Point podcast. Citizens deserve a government they can trust. This is where we bring together leaders from government and industry to reveal the secrets behind how we're transforming customer and citizen experiences. On the show, we chat with unsung heroes who work behind the scenes to improve the lives of citizens and government employees. We learn from the people who do it and the challenges they face. I'm your host, Martha Doris. Let's do it. Welcome to the CX Tipping Point podcast. Today, we're talking to Courtney K. Decker, the Deputy Taxpayer Experience Officer at the Internal Revenue Service. Welcome to the CX Tipping Point podcast, Courtney.
Thank you for having me, Martha.
So Courtney's kind of new to this town, and she's not new to taxes or the whole area of tax administration. You have a long history of working in the tax area and revenue. But one day she called me, or she said to me, "I listen to your podcast every day." I was so excited to hear that.
That's how a person gets themselves on the podcast.
There you go.
Service message.
and we were talking beforehand around, you know, what a small town this is in terms of all of the people who are kind of focused on customer experience. So we're really glad to have you and welcome you with open arms, because, you know, we can all use, you know, more people in our tribe of helping to improve the services that we provide to the public. But you have a long history, so I wanted to start by letting you kind of explain your background, and then we'll go into your focus at the IRS and kind of what your role is at the IRS.
Okay. I'll try to keep it short, because sometimes I get long-winded in this space.
People need to know, like, everything you've done so that when you get put into a position like this, that they realize you have so much experience to help.
All right. So I started my career as a lawyer, doing business work, which included all kinds of tax work. I was appointed a few years into my career to serve on what was then the last formal appeal board in the Iowa Department of Revenue, before going to the district court. So I got to be sort of a judge. It was not an administrative law judge, but it was a board that had similar duties. Through that process, I happened to get to know some folks at the Iowa Department of Revenue. And one day, the governor-elect came knocking and asked me if I'd be willing to serve as the director of the Department of Revenue in the state of Iowa. So I felt like in my time in that space, which was about 8 years, I got to be the chief taxpayer experience officer for my state. Not before it was a thing for you, Martha, but before it was really a thing at the state level. And so that let me see really firsthand, not only, you know, the issues that my clients were facing, but I got to see the issues that taxpayers across my state were facing. And it really made me think very hard about how tax administration has an impact on real people who are generally just trying to do the right thing. And that passion has just continued to grow as I served on various committees with the IRS and for the state revenue agencies. I was on the board for the Tax Administration Association, Federation of Tax Administrators. I served on one of the IRS advisory committees under the FACA, Federal Advisory Committee Act, the ETAC, Electronic Tax Administration Advisory Committee. And by the way, I'm from the IRS and we like acronyms. So I will try to remember to spell them out if I go into one.
I think the whole government's like that. So it's not just
It's not just the IRS. Okay. So on those committees, those were committees that were focused on how to make electronic administration better for taxpayers and everyone in the tax ecosystem. And, you know, all of these experiences, you know, sort of led me to the path of being Deputy Chief Taxpayer Experience Officer, which I started in December of 2022. So I'm still kind of new.
So we'll give you a little pass for the new kid, right?
Right.
We're pulling you into everything we can get you into as quickly as we can. I'm sure you're seeing that. What have been your first impressions in coming into the federal government and the IRS?
So I had some good experience being on the outside. So I got to work with IRS folks, and I always had the perception that people in the IRS are a pretty passionate bunch who want to do the best job that they possibly can. And, you know, for many years, budgets have been tight and, you know, it's been a challenge to get stuff done. But I never saw people who didn't have that passion for trying to get things done. And of course, when you're on the outside, you don't necessarily know whether that's the reality on the inside, but it is. And the work that I get to do in working with the various areas across the IRS in trying to help folks, you know, think about experience in a different way, it's just so rewarding to see how much people actually care about making a difference for taxpayers. And I think that doesn't get said enough in the world, that, you know, we're the tax collector. I don't think we're ever going to be the popular agency in the world. But by the same token, the people are trying to do good things, you know, and so I wasn't terribly surprised by that. I was, you know, the technology things that we all hear about, I think not surprising to me. Probably the most surprising thing was the level of, you know, other procedures and hoops that we have to jump through to accomplish things. And some of those are external to IRS. Some of them are our own. And some of them exist for good reason. But the thinking about whether the hoops that exist make sense in a modern world, I think is part of the fun of experience.
Well, I was going to say, I know at the VA, one exercise they did go through was, you know, when they were doing things in a certain way and everybody said, well, that's just the way we have to do it because of XYZ, they actually went through and said, is it a law or is it like a myth or is it in policy that could be changed? Or, you know, are there ways to streamline processes because, you know, everybody thinks it has to be done that way. So that's actually sort of a win-win for them when they went through that. I was also going to mention, you know, treating taxpayers as customers has been talked about a long, long time. I don't know if you've seen the Many Unhappy Returns book.
I read it. It's
that Charles Rosati wrote. Yeah. When I first got into customer experience, I actually went, Jim Williams and I went and met with him and we're really talking about, we were trying to get, you know, get it kind of geared up in the government. And
I'm a commissioner groupie, so I'm jealous. I'm jealous that you got to do that.
Well, when you read it, you realize how much is different, but how much is still the same. And that it is hard to get people to wrap their heads around because you only have one place to pay your taxes, to treat taxpayers as customers. And like you said, people want to pay their taxes. And so the IRS is, you know, trying to make sure that it's as easy, simple, understandable as possible. So, you know, you can get that money in the treasury. So what is it like? I forget. I heard Danny talk this morning. I mean, there's some, you know, what's the number on the amount of funding that you guys pay for, right? Like 86% or something. I forget. We'll have to.
Oh yes. It's like $4.9 trillion is what we collect every year. It grows in gross revenues, but it's like 95%, but don't quote me on that.
Yeah, no, it's a big
huge
number.
Amount of the revenues for the country.
It's a big, job, right? Like it's critical to the country. It's critical to national security. And, you know, I don't really like paying my taxes, you know, any more than anybody else's, but I do, I've always made the case that customer experience is about, you know, delivering on the mission and making it as easy on everyone as possible. So it's really nice to see, you know, that you guys are continuing. And I know with Ken as the taxpayer experience officer, and now you're in there, and I had a meeting with him recently, and he said he's sort of focusing on his wage and investment work, and he's coaching and mentoring and giving you a lot of the responsibility around taxpayer experience, but he's still right in there involved. And
he's the best boss ever, and a wonderful coach. And, you know, for anybody who has met Ken, you know, in our little community or heard him speak, you know, he's an amazing representative for thinking about the taxpayer, while also understanding how all of those complicated behind the scenes systems work. And, you know, and I think that's one of the messages that when I'm out speaking to people, you know, trying to help folks understand where we are in our transformation process, you know, we have so many really amazing tools that we're hoping to roll out, you know, some starting as soon as this fall. Like, for example, I think today they just announced that the rollout of some of the EV credit stuff under the Inflation Reduction Act, some of those tools are going to start to roll out in October. And then we have a bunch of tools that are coming online by the beginning of the filing season. So those are all, you know, very user-focused tools that will make things better for taxpayers. And, you know, starting to get to that point where we know the vast majority of the world now wants to interact with their financial institutions electronically. So they probably want to interact with us electronically too. So making the space for those folks who want that service to get it in the way that they want it leaves room then for folks who do need to talk to us on the phone or interact with us in person or even on paper to do so and have less less friction and less trouble getting through to us because the needs are less with respect to, you know, because we've moved a bunch of folks off of the need to have those analog services. And I think it's really important, you know, you'll hear Ken talk about it too, is this choice and access concept.
Right.
You know, because we have to serve everybody, because it's our privilege to serve everybody in this country, we need to be sure that we can meet them where they are. And that will mean that some people want or need to interact with us in a way that is not digital. Right. And we have to make that path available.
Yeah. Danny was talking this morning about, you know, all of the electronic filing, but also as paper comes in, you know, to go ahead and digitize the paper as it comes in so that you can start, you know, working more electronically. Mm-hmm. And of course we know last Friday, the guidance came out on delivering a digital first,
Delivering a digital first public experience yeah. right here beside yeah. me.
And I think we're all like, it's a 32 page document. So we're all kind of looking through it, absorbing it, trying to identify, you know, anything that's new. Of course, it's really guidelines and how to instructions on implementation of the 21st Century IDEA, you know, Integrated Digital Experience Act. So,
and I think the exciting thing for me in that space, and, you know, we're still working through figuring out how we might implement it. There's a lot of things in there that are really, you know, common sense sort of right. things that we've been in the process of doing for quite a while. But now that we have this, you know, wonderful funding, we can up our game, you know, and really that is, it gives me goosebumps to think about, you know, and watch the people in the IRS who, you know, have had ideas on, you know, we could do this better if we just had right. a little bit more money, resources, what have you, we could deliver something so much better. And giving them that freedom to start to, you know, ideate on what the possible is, you know, in really providing excellent service to our taxpayers. It's just a really exciting time to be able to be in the IRS.
And the IRS has been starved for funding for a long, long, long time, right? And the environment has changed in that time. So now that you have that funding, what are you thinking about? The Inflation Reduction Act funding, right?
So, you know, I think the Inflation Reduction Act really, it gives us the privilege of implementing so many of those ideas, as I talked about. You know, right. it's a 10-year funding stream that allows us, again, to take that step back and say, you know, put ourselves in the taxpayer's shoes and say, what is it that a taxpayer needs to see from their perspective? And I think one of the benefits that, you know, having an experience office does for your operating units. So we have people within the IRS, not in the taxpayer experience office, who really care about experience type things too. So we're not the exclusive holder of experience.
Which is good. That's the way it should be, right?
Exactly. So it makes it easier to help embed an experience, you know, sort of idea into our DNA that we already have those champions out and about in the IRS. So thinking about that paperless process that the commissioner talked about, you know, that has the thought process of, you know, we're going to recognize that taxpayers may, for whatever reason, choose to file on paper, but we know a digital experience, you know, from the processing perspective, will make it better for them. So how do we start that journey down that road? And, you know, I think it's important for people in the world to see that what we're doing has to be incremental. Because of, you know, technology and all of the rules behind the scenes in the technology that we have to write to make sure that we're administering the law correctly, all of those sorts of technological changes, you know, can't be done at lightning pace without risking derailing the whole system. Mm-hmm. So it has to be methodical and careful. So the public will start to see these small improvements. And they've been seeing them, I think, hopefully right away. You know, we have things like there's a document upload tool that's coming. So when you get that notice in the mail, you're able to upload your response in many cases and put it into either your online account or to another portal location where it gets uploaded and processed. But it's still going to be processed manually by humans. Until we can build the right tools to review those things. And, you know, that's, I'm patience is a virtue, but I'm not one who's known to have patience, which is perhaps good in this space, because then I can help share with people that, you know, taxpayers aren't going to enjoy that being able to upload their document if they don't understand that there's still a long processing time behind the scenes. And those are things that are being worked, but they don't get to show up tomorrow. And I worry for the IRS that, you know, we might not seem to be doing enough, even though what's happening is really monumental and incredible. You know, so the foundational work that's happening behind the scenes that nobody gets to really see because it's boring, you know, technological stuff, you know, things like moving to the cloud and all of that modern stuff that everyone in the private sector and probably most of, you know, the humans in the country realize is happening. We're behind on that. So it's, those things are kind of the first things first as you think about it.
There are a couple things. I don't know, you know, in terms of, I know the VA does a trust report out on their website to actually document like all of the kind of, you know, successes that they've had. And I think some of that could be even just communicating with people so that it's like, you know, we've got a lot of success, but it is going to take time and mm-hmm. people don't obviously know like the magnitude, right? Like the scale of the stuff that you all are doing. And have you already started that? Is that why you're, you know?
Stay tuned.
There you go. I mean, it's always good for the government to tell their success stories. And, you know, over the years, we've had hundreds and maybe hundreds and hundreds of winners of the Service to the Citizen Awards from the IRS for different capabilities that they've created. And so I'm well aware of the successes that have been going on. And I know that, you know, with you and Ken, there's, I'm a big fan of a chief customer office, obviously, but I also think that it's not bad to work yourself out of a job, because if you've infused it in the, across an organization and they don't need you anymore, you know, more power to you. But in most agencies, that's not
funny
where we
you
are.
Say that, because I was just thinking, you know, the next time that I'm up talking to our team, I want to say that, because I think, and I'm saying it to you before I've said it to them. But I think it's so important to be thinking about what we're doing in a way that, you know, ideally puts ourselves out of the job, because, you know, we want the experience thinking, the ability to think about the taxpayer exclusively or the customer exclusively and their experience, and separate your brain
right.
from the processes behind the scenes. So how do we embed in a way that allows the employees in the organization, whether it's the IRS or whatever agency, to be able to separate themselves from the work? Because I think one of the challenges of experience is that you know how the processes work when you're in an agency,
mm-hmm.
and they cloud your judgment of what processes you're thinking about. And, you know, it's like proofreading. You know, when you're proofreading your own work, you miss your typos. And so by getting someone who can separate their brain from those processes and say, you know, you're missing a comma there that you couldn't see anymore,
mm-hmm.
I think is a really valuable skill. So just having the idea that we would put ourselves out of business may not necessarily mean that it would actually happen, but the sentiment still has value.
Well, and I think the role, you know, one of the roles of a chief customer office at any agency is really like aligning leadership on customer values, right? And
mm-hmm.
also in creating a customer focused organization, and what you were saying, putting the customer first, right? Like thinking about the impact on the customer of what you're doing, and then how you actually do it, or before you actually do it, thinking about, okay, how does this impact the customer? And sometimes it has to be, or it should be based on like real data, right? Like what you really know about them, either from them directly, you know, through qualitative or quantitative data, but, you know, making that part of the DNA of an organization. And it's, many, many agencies, I think, have, you know, or many of the people really believe in the whole like experience and service first, but it's sometimes just hard, right? So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, when you have something that you need to deliver, you know, you're thinking about the delivery,
right?
And you want to have the experience be good, but ultimately it has to work in your system.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think perhaps that's how people who have come from the IRS, or like me, I've come from state tax administration, I generally have a sense as to how the systems work, but I don't know how they work in enough detail to
mm-hmm.
be able to be, you know, not able to see the bigger picture. Like, for example, you know, when we talk internally, we talk about our online account and the way you authenticate as two completely different things. So when I talk to a human being out in the real world and I ask them about their online account, they will tell me about their experience authenticating,
mm-hmm.
because to them it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So helping people inside see that whole process to a taxpayer that, you know, they don't care about all of the stuff that's going on behind the scenes and that we have allocated into all these different buckets. They're just seeing what I'm trying to do and I can't do it, or I can do it.
Right.
So I think that's a place where, you know, we can add value, and, you know, the pulling in the voice of the customer, just in informal, you know, conversations when people come and say stuff to us, you know, I think is the tip of, you know, could be the canary in the coal mine, or, you
right.
know, whatever analogy you want to use, that gives us that hint that something is going on. And how do we take that information and, like you said, marry it with data, and identify those pain points sooner so that we can, you know, ideally address them before they become huge problems. And in the IRS, there are pockets of people who are already collecting that sort of data. And, you know, I think we have a vision of being able to pull it together in a way that, you know, provides more intelligence sooner for our processes, you know, and just, you know, being in that mode of continuous improvement.
I'm definitely a big fan of like the real-time feedback so you can catch problems before they become real problems, right? Like you can, you see the indicators long before anybody actually thinks that they're a problem. And I think you're talking about just integrating operational and customer data, experience data together. And I know, you know, in some agencies, not many agencies are doing that yet, but that's also a way for sustainability over time, right? So when people are reviewing things and they're looking at the outcomes and the results and the, you know, performance, they're looking at both operational and experience data. So
yeah, and I think the fabulous thing, you know, about the work that we get to do in, you know, the space with the executive order on customer experience and OMB A11-280, you know, that giving us those pieces of accountability, I think really helps to keep our minds focused on the fact that, you know, what we're doing ultimately has an impact on people and their lives, because as you're thinking about things like trust and satisfaction, it's a great reminder every day. And being able to have that sort of information and then be able to connect the dots back to our folks and help them see this is how you're making a difference. And, you know, it's hard because it's not one-to-one, you know, data right. analytics, but you can definitely see that the, you know, for example, the changes that we had with more people on the phones over the past tax season. So that made, you know, it made a difference in the satisfaction levels in all of our scores. So you can see the movement. You're not going to be able to see it one for one on all of the various projects that we're working, but the trend certainly is there. And I think it's really helpful to have that ability to tie those things together.
For sure. What about when you were talking about the, you know, the projects that are underway and funded through the Inflation Reduction Act? Did you have a process for prioritizing those investments, or did you just already have such a pipeline that you just kind of went down the list and said, okay, this is what we can pay for? You know, I could see that happening, right? Like we knew this is everything we wanted to take on, and this is what it was going to cost. And when we got to the level where that's how much money we got, we're done.
Well, so I think the interesting thing about tax administration is that the world is ever changing for us. Mm-hmm. You know, the laws are changing, sure. You know, every year we get new laws. And so we know every year that we're going to have some implementation that we're going to have to do for, you know, changing law.
Right.
And I suppose a lot of agencies have that as well. But taxes are a favorite area for Congress to change. So we plan on every year that mm-hmm. we're going to have to do those updates. And then, you know, there so much of the stuff is technology based that we're working on, again, to try and meet some of those digital first concepts,
right.
But also to provide tools that people are expecting. So we knew the phones were a big issue. So evaluating things that could make the phones better and relieve pressure on the phones were high priority. So evaluating where do we have the biggest volumes of paper coming in? You know, where do we have the biggest volumes of communication that we're making with taxpayers? So, you know, it's I think to some extent, it's making sure that the 80%, you know, in your 80-20 rule, you know, we have to deliver a tax season every year. And if we miss the 80%, we're in big trouble. Mm-hmm. So that all has to happen. All of those updates have to happen. And then we're in the 20% of making things better for, you know, whatever we can within that time frame. And as you start to improve these things, you know, we're going to learn. And the cool thing about how we thought about the strategic operating plan is that we were intentional in saying, this does not belong on a shelf. We're going to continue to think about it. And you know, that's what we've been doing over the past, you know, months since it's come out, is we're continuing to say, okay, we've got these things that are about to be in flight. What are we going to do next? How are we going to do it? Does it still make sense to do that next? All of those sorts of evaluations, I think, are transformative in the way that just in the way that we're thinking about them. And it's just really cool to see.
One of the things, I mean, it's not totally pertaining to this topic, but it just occurred to me, all of the communication that you all have internally on a regular basis, especially in this remote environment, right, where there's standups between the experienced team and other parts of the organization to make sure. And I guess my point in bringing this up is, you know, there are lots of silos in every agency, but you guys are making an effort to create these communication methods so that everybody is staying on top of, you know, and going, rowing in the same direction, basically.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I think having a commissioner that came from, a government experience for a good part of his career, and then also had some private experience, he comes to us with so much process improvement and, right, you know, systems knowledge, that I think it's pretty easy for folks to get on board with that and say, you know, look, you know, we feel like we're moving in a forward direction, and, you know, we're going to make mistakes along the way, because, you know, we're human. But those mistakes are still moving us forward, because there are things that we need to learn, before we get too far down the road of trying, right, them, because we're doing stuff we've never done before.
Right.
I mean, even though private industry may have done some of these things 20 years ago, you know, we can glean some of the learnings, but we still have our foundation that we have to build on. That's not like everybody else. And we have to go from there. So, I keep saying it's good stuff. It's just a really good time to be in this space.
Well, and I mean, trying new things out in a small way is the best way to, you know, learn, mm-hmm, before you go big.
I think the other thing that's fun about what we can do in the Taxpayer Experience Office is, you know, we can highlight those things that, you know, are being tried, being piloted, that move the ball on experience. You know, we might go through all of the metrics as to how it's a good thing from an efficiency or effectiveness perspective, but overlaying on that, this is a good experience thing, and then saying, okay, is this something that's repeatable that we can have other areas of the IRS do? You know, that's, for me, it's very fun to be able to be talking about things that people have figured out and trying to map that to other processes and, you know, create a variation on the theme.
Well, when we talked to Ken recently, he was mentioning, like, when we talked about how industry could support the IRS, one of the things he said is, we don't know what we don't know. And the IRS seems much more open to, like, okay, tell us what we don't know, you know, like, we, mm-hmm, want to see it. And so I thought that was really a refreshing, mm-hmm, you know,
yeah,
perspective.
And I don't know if you pay a lot of attention to the press releases from the IRS, but there have been a lot more things, and maybe it's, you know, just because I'm paying attention, but it feels like we're asking for feedback much more frequently,
mm-hmm,
in this, you know, post strategic operating plan, you know, implementation phase. And I think it to me, it's not check the box. This is, we actually want to know and we want to listen. And, I mean, that's a pretty hard thing to do. I think I heard you say on your last podcast that feedback is a gift.
Exactly.
You know, sometimes feedback is really hard to receive, though, because it's, you know, it's criticizing you for something that you feel like you did a good job on. So, mm-hmm, you know, asking for feedback is, we can keep telling us ourselves is a gift, but it's hard.
You know, we're talking about sending out some surveys ourselves for some of the work that we do. And I'm like, do I really want to do that? I'm like, you have to do it, right? Like, that's your, you know, and you're like, I don't know if I really want to hear that. And you're like, oh, you know, but you really got to do it. And, you know, so I get it. And I think that held the government up for so long. People, first of all, they either didn't want to hear the feedback or they didn't have the resources to fix it anyway. So they didn't want to be stuck with this like thing that they couldn't really do anything about. So you hit the nail on the head.
And having, you know, things like the executive order, and for us, legislation like the Taxpayer First Act, or, you know, all the way back to RRA 98, the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, what is it? Revenue Reconciliation Act, RRA 1998. those things help, you know, put a flag in the ground that say, you know, you need to manage to those statutory, regulatory, other, you know, bodies on things that make things better for your taxpayers. And, you know, to the extent that the experience office can say, hey, not only can you do your job, but you can weave in and meet these requirements at the same time, you know, that's part of what our secret sauce. It's, you know, connecting those dots of, you know, what people are saying or what the law says, any of those tools that help us, you know, bring to the forefront that things that we want to do anyway, because we think they're the right thing, are probably the right thing from an experience perspective too. Mm-hmm. And so we're nailing all, you know, checking all kinds of boxes, by, you know, doing what at the end of the day is the right thing to do.
Correct. What about, you know, resources has always been such a big component to challenges, or, you know, big part of the challenges. Now that you actually have this funding, what do you see as your biggest challenges going forward? I mean, I know there's so many things to do in such a short period of time. And, you know, we're talking today as we're not sure if we're going to have a shutdown. So, you know, that doesn't help things either, but.
Yeah. So we have a great new human capital officer, from GSA. She came to us from GSA, your old stomping grounds, and who is doing all kinds of things to improve the hiring process. Our hiring processes have been, you know, and I think that's the case in lots of places in government. They're much slower.
But you guys are hiring massive amounts of people.
We are hiring massive amounts of people. So there's all kinds of work in place to speed that process, help get people onboarded, you know, thinking about how do we do training in an environment where, some people are virtual and some are in the office, you know, how do you build those bonds? So all of those HR type challenges are still there. You know, and then just being in an environment where, it's tough to get people. And so, you know, those, you know, you have to get somebody who wants to be in service because there are financial,
right,
challenges there.
Workforce issues. And I know, I think probably security clearances too, right? Like getting people who can.
Yes. And
security clearance process.
Right. You need to be in tax compliance to come work with the IRS. So there are all kinds of hoops that you have to jump through on the hiring side.
Right.
You know, we all know the procurement process is not the fastest thing. And a lot of what we need is technology. Right. So moving that process ahead. And frankly, that's why the way that IRA has funded us is so critical and something that the IRS had been asking for a number of years, because the procurement process takes so long. You know, we need to make sure that we have the money committed over some period of time so that we can not only procure, but then implement in the time that we're allowed to spend the money.
Right.
So, you know, I think those timing things are still challenges, you know, and just having to, you know, continue to run an agency, you know, and just making the decisions of, you know, what are we, I've learned new terms since I've started this job. Technical debt was a new one for me. Learning about, you know, and I guess I knew about it conceptually. I just didn't know that it was a term,
right,
you know, that, you know, you're investing things into old technology that ultimately, you need to replace pretty soon. And, you know, it's sort of that opportunity cost thing. So how do you balance those choices, knowing you must continue to deliver a tax season to right. the entire population that works, while at the same time you're replacing all these things, and you know you can't have two IRSs running side by side.
I mean, there's no room for mistakes, really. There's, you know, which is part of the reason I assume that you have to move in a small incremental way, so that you know anything can roll back if it needs to or whatever.
So my old adage from where, you know, coming from state government was, you know, we do everything we can not to change anything from a technology perspective once tax season started.
Right.
Because, you know, when you have old programming, you know, the people who program some of the code are long gone and maybe long dead. And so,
I gotta hone up my COBOL skills.
Hey, I think you would be in demand.
I think so too. My COBOL book's around here somewhere.
But so if you have these old systems that nobody knows exactly, you know, what the foundational code will do, you don't want to break something in the middle of the season. So you might have a crisis that comes up and you have to have a terribly inartful workaround, because it is just too dangerous to try to fix those things.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think the hope for new technology is that it will be more nimble and, you know, you still probably won't want to change a lot on the fly during the season, but you might have some more flexibility. And so that's something that I'm really hopeful for as we get through all of this modernization and transformation.
Well, I mean, you mentioned the hiring, and I know that you guys have prioritized too the employees and your customer experience work too. So maybe we can, you know, we'll talk about that on the next podcast. Since we don't have a ton of time, I wanted to ask you, you know, what are your priorities for the next year? Like, what are your top three priorities for next year?
So first, let me talk a little bit about the commissioner's priorities for the IRS as a whole, because I think that helps us frame the big picture of where we're going with the strategic operating plan. And really, because of what our focus on experience in the strategic operating plan is quite meaningful from a taxpayer experience perspective. So first of all, you know, number one priority is the commissioner wants to make sure that taxpayers are able to get to us when they want and how they want. It's that choice and access, making sure that if you want to contact us by phone, in person, online, you're able to do that and get a response in a reasonable amount of time, and also to get the right answers to get you on the path to resolution of whatever the issue is that you have. The second place is enforcement. We're looking for fairness in enforcement. The commissioner wants to make sure that as we go through our different audit projects, that we're thinking about applying the right level of enforcement, depending on the type of noncompliance that exists. And, you know, there's discussion about what level is appropriate for a multimillionaire versus someone who's getting EITC. And we've had lots of discussions publicly about what that looks like. And again, at the end of the day, from an experience perspective, we should be applying the right amount of enforcement that is necessary to get a taxpayer into compliance. And it may be that education is the right approach. And that's the only nudge that a taxpayer will need. Some need more. And that's where you apply additional enforcement strength. The last priority that the commissioners articulated is protecting taxpayers and the taxpaying public from scams. The more we roll out online digital services, the more we all as taxpayers need to make sure we're watching out for our own information and, you know, starting that conversation to make sure that taxpayers understand how to protect themselves and that we are sharing information based on the scams that we know about to help taxpayers get what they need and make sure we're serving the right taxpayer and not sending information to people that we shouldn't is another key from the overall IRS perspective.
Listening and understanding customers is like the, it's almost like the gate opens, right? Like that's, that's really, I mean, visually I can see like the gate opening and like all of the, you know, the insights, and it just gives you the secret sauce, right? Like the
it
secret
is.
Behind what's going to happen. Is there anything else that we haven't talked about that you want to, you know, you want to mention? I reserve the right to get you back in here and, follow up on all of these things, because we could probably talk all day.
We could talk all day. And I don't know if I can narrow it down to one thing that I feel like we didn't talk about, because there are so many exciting things that are happening. And I guess maybe what I'd like to leave folks with is, you know, it's such a great time to be watching what's happening in the IRS from a taxpayer perspective. And I know that people in the world aren't excited about, you know, tax administration. I think about, you know, the Oliver Wendell Holmes quote that I think I probably misquote, that taxes are the price that we pay for a civilized society. And, you know, that's really meaningful to me, and why tax administration, it feels like my place as part of, you know, the operation of our democracy. And, you know, hopefully taxpayers will really start seeing, you know, little things starting to come about, that when they have a challenging experience, it ends up being less challenging. And it'll take us some time. And that's why it's so important that we have funding for a 10-year period for these improvements.
Well, these jobs are never really done, right? Like
they're not.
Keep changing, technology changes, expectations change. And I would just say, you know, how lucky the IRS is to have you come to the federal government to help with this, you know, this, you know, big, you know, effort and in making this as easy on people as possible. And that it your love of tax administration, you know, that's what you need, right? You need people in these jobs that love what they do, believe in what they do. And so thank you for your service, and we're happy to have you.
Well, thank you for the time. I'm thrilled to have gotten to be on your podcast.
Me too. All righty.
Thanks for listening to the CX Tipping Point podcast. We would love to hear from you. If you have a chance, please rate and review. Hit subscribe to keep up with the new episodes, and pass it along to a friend. And in the meantime, follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and tweet us at Doris Consulting.